The deaths of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, as well as Stephon Clark locally, have brought tensions between the community and the police to the boiling point. Today, we are joined by the president of the Sacramento Police Officers Association, Timothy Davis. We invited the representatives of the Sacramento County Deputy Sheriff's Association. Unfortunately, they were unable to join us today. Tim, since the death of George Floyd and the protests that have followed, what has it been like to be a Sacramento City police officer?
Well, it's been a lot of work, and it's been quite difficult. When the incident happened in Minnesota, our association was one of the first associations to condemn those actions. The actions of the officers there were reprehensible, and were not representative of policing the way that we police here in Sacramento, or policing should be done anywhere in this nation. And so, you know, our officers quickly condemned that, and that is not what we like to see. That's not the type of police work that we want to take place. And so our officers were just as angry about what happened there as the community was. And, we want to find ways that we can move forward as a nation to make sure that those events don't happen again in our country.
Okay. From the perspective of yourself and your members, how representative of the public's feelings toward the police are the protests that have taken place since the beginning of summer, and those as well during the time of after the death of Stephon Clark?
Well, we know that have an overwhelming support from our community, and we're very thankful for that. But sometimes when you have people right there in your face yelling at you, shining lasers in your eyes, throwing rocks at you, calling you names, especially our officers of color, who oftentimes take the brunt of those attacks. It's hard to remember that, but we need to remember that, the people screaming in our faces are not representative of how our community feels. And our community loves our officers. They support us, and we're very grateful for that and the relationship we have with our community here in Sacramento.
Right. And part of what has been boiling and festering for a long time has been this anger and this perception that the police are not community partners and more of an occupying force. What part of that anger from the protesters and from activists do you and your colleagues understand? And what parts do you absolutely reject?
Well, first of all, I think a lot of times people misconstrue the relationship between the rank and file police officers, who I represent, and management and the elected officials. Our officers go out there and they police the city the way they were trained to police. They follow the policies that they were trained to follow. They enforce the laws that were created by a legislature. And so our officers sometimes take an unfair attacks on our officers for what they do when what they're doing is their job. Our officers are trained to do a job a certain way, and the policies are written by managers who teach our officers how to do their job. And then the state legislature is the body that creates the laws and that we're required to enforce. And so our officers don't get to set the laws, they don't get to choose the policies, and they don't train themselves. And so if we want to have talks about how we can change policing in America, those need to start with discussions about what should our policies be, what should the training be, what laws should we have in our country. And those are the dialogues that we need to be having instead of people throwing rocks at the officers that are just there to do their job.
When you say that, it sounds a lot like that the public sometimes has a misplaced focus on the rank and file officer as opposed to its leadership and the elected officials that direct that leadership. At the same time, policing calls for independent judgment in the field. How much responsibility should we as the public assign to how you all use your independent judgment in the field when it comes to things like police-involved shootings or what some might perceive as disproportionate policing among certain communities?
Well, our officers are, we do a good job of training our officers, and it all starts with hiring the best people. And we need to make sure that we have the best people to work here that we have the best training available, the best tools. And every time that we have an event that doesn't always go the way that we want it to go, we can learn from that. And we need to be able to have those dialogues in a safe place where we can have constructive dialogues that will help us to make our police better. But our officers do a very difficult job. They're asked to make life and death decisions in split seconds, often without most of the information available to them. And we put our officers into these difficult situations because we want our communities to be safe and we want them to be out there to protect ourselves. And sometimes those situations don't always go the way that we want. And sometimes they end tragically, but our officers are doing the best they can. We have great people that are doing very difficult work in our community. And it's easy for us to spend months second guessing their actions that they only had a split second to decide.
That raises a question about who's attracted to law enforcement and how people are actually hired. Among some, there's a perception that those that gravitate toward law enforcement sometimes are people who otherwise don't feel very empowered. And once you put a weapon on them and give them the authority that comes with being a member of law enforcement, that it goes to their head and they don't necessarily exercise self-control. What can you tell us about how potential police officers in Sacramento are identified and what is done to screen them to make sure that only people with the appropriate mentality, emotional intelligence, and judgment actually get to carry a gun?
Well, we want to hire the best people that we can. And that starts with widening the applicant pool the best that we can. And the more applicants we have, you know, the better pool of candidates we have to choose from. But people don't just show up here, ask to be a cop, and are given a gun the next day. It's a very long and tedious process that we go through to make sure that we only hire the best people. And that process starts from the time that an officer first puts in, a potential applicant puts in an application, to the time that they're out working the street alone. We're talking 2 to 2.5 year process. It's not an overnight thing. And so we have plenty of opportunities to review that. There's a written test, a physical test, a mental evaluation, a medical physical that they take place, panel interviews, community involvement. And once we get to the point where we're ready to send somebody to the police academy, which sometimes is 6 to 9 months after that process. Also in that first process, there's an extensive background check and a polygraph examination. We don't subject any other occupation in the state to polygraph examinations, but we make sure that when we are hiring officers, we're so worried about making sure, we're so concerned about only letting the right people be hired, that we go through an extensive background and polygraph examination for these employees. Even then, the day that they start the police academy, now we have them in a controlled environment where we can see what type of person they are, how they interact with others, how they react to scenarios and training. And we fail out about a third to a half of the candidates that come through our academy because, you know, if we see any issues with their integrity, they're gone. If we find any issues, as you talked about, you know, are they in this job for the wrong reasons, then they're gone. And we want to make sure that when we enter the people, finally put them out, swear them in, put their badge on after that 6 months academy, that we have vetted them thoroughly enough that we only have the best people here serving our community. And even then, the process isn't over. We send them out with another officer for for 6 months. So they're out in the field for 6 months, each month getting a new officer to ride with. And so we have six different veteran officers that have skills and knowledge and are trained in looking for evaluating their trainees. And if any problems arise during that 6 month period, then we'll release the employee. After that 6 month period, they become a probationary officer and they're out there working on their own. However, they have to spend the next year on probation. And if they make mistakes during that period of time, they can be released as a probationary employee. So we're talking 6 months to a year before they get into the academy, 6 months in the academy, 6 months of field training, and another year of probation. And so we have a very elaborate process to make sure that we weed out the bad apples and that we that the officers that we choose to serve the city are the best and the brightest and are ones that can truly serve this community in the right way.
So given all that you've just said about this extensive process, when you have situations like the death of Stephon Clark and Joseph Mann and others, and the city decides to, in the face of litigation, to settle out of court, the implied result or the implication of that is that there was some sort of fault or misjudgment found, but the city decided not to fight it. Based on what you've just shared with us, it sounds like that if it was you and your association's call, that you all would not necessarily have moved for settlement of those cases because you've done so much extensive training.
Well, I'm not going to speak for the city attorney, and they make their decisions on what cases they settle and which cases they don't, based on, you know, sometimes it's the cost of litigating the case. Sometimes it's for political reasons. Sometimes it's because, you know, the best way forward is to settle those cases. So I'm not privy to all the information that they use to settle those cases. But those are their decisions, and they're not those of the rank and file and not those of the association.
I'm just curious, in your tenure leading the union or the association, and just in general, in the time that it's been in existence, have you all ever expelled a member finding out that they were either violent or a danger to the public or supported the expulsion of an officer?
We've removed members for different reasons over the years. And but I think more importantly, you know, sometimes when, you know, we're presented with an internal affairs case and we have an employee that's clearly done wrong, I've had very difficult conversations with people saying, this is probably not the line of work and you're probably better to just resign and move on rather than to continue your career here. And I've encouraged people to seek other occupations, and those conversations have been successful. We don't want police officers in Sacramento that are going to bring disrepute on the rest of the officers here. We want to make sure that we only have the best officers working here, and we truly want to serve this community. And, you know, sometimes people think, well, it's the union. They're going to fight for everybody and try to keep everybody's job.
That is an assumption.
But that's not the case. Well, I do have a responsibility to every one of my members, and I represent every one of the police officers here in Sacramento. But sometimes we have these conversations where, look, you know, your best bet here is to move on because this isn't the career for you. And those are important conversations because it protects the integrity of the rest of us, because it's important for us to do that. And I think it's important when our officers, if they see other officers doing wrong, that they need to report that. And it's my experience in seeing our internal affairs cases that more often than not, when we have officers that are accused of misconduct, it's because other officers have witnessed that misconduct and reported them. We encourage that because, you know, we need to police our own. It's important that we keep the integrity of the and total organization intact.
When you hear the call for defunding the police, big conversation right now, what does it say to you as a law enforcement professional?
Well, I know we need to have important conversations about what's the best avenue to serve our community. But when we talk about defunding the police, what we're really talking about is cutting services to the public. Because what is our organization? The Sacramento Police Department, the Sacramento Police Officers Association, we're both here to serve this community. Our ultimate goal is to make Sacramento a better place and a safer place to be. And so if we cut services to our community, then what we do is we make it unsafe. And we already know what cutting police services looks like in Sacramento because, unfortunately, in 2011, we faced economic crisis. The budget had to be cut. And we saw the things that were cut. Our our primary responsibility as an organization, the Sacramento Police Department's organization, is to provide service to those who call 911. So responding to calls for service. Somebody's house is getting broken into, somebody's getting robbed, they've been in a car accident, their child has gone missing. We respond out to those calls. And a lot of other things that we do, so I'll call those the first response. The other things that we do, like if an officer responds out to a robbery and they get the information, under our current staffing, that officer will send that information to a detective who will follow up in the goal of apprehending the person that committed the robbery and prevent further robberies from happening. But in 2011, when we did cuts, we had to cut our sex assault detectives. We had to cut our homicide detectives. We cut our traffic unit. We stopped responding to burglaries. We stopped responding to car collisions. And citizens were left to sort these things out on their own. And that's what happens when you cut funding to the police. It's not that we're going to stop responding to calls. What we're going to do is stop investigating them afterwards, and we're going to stop doing the other services like problem-oriented policing that help reduce crimes in impoverished neighborhoods. It's going to stop officers from being able to get out of their car and walk in the communities and create relationships.
There are those who say that we ask cops to do too much, that every societal failure, we put it off on cops. According to the research done by the Sacramento Bee, your police officers only spend 4% of their time responding to violent crime and 32% responding to non-criminal calls. Is it unreasonable for those who support cutting police budgets to assert that the police are better to be deployed for activities that could be that are violent, and that those other things that seem to consume so much time would be better addressed by other expert professionals that cost less?
Well, I think there are two things I want to say. First of all, is that I would dispute those numbers. I think that, you know, when you look at what a call is said, you know, when a call comes in, it often isn't what it says by the time that you get there. And so when you're just looking at how many calls that we have that are indicated as violent, oftentimes we arrive at calls that are supposed to be violent, and when we get there, they're not. And oftentimes we get dispatched to calls that should be nothing at all, and there's violence that is erupted when we get there or before we've gotten there. And so that's the fear about having other people respond. We work closely with county social workers as it is on many calls, but they're not going to respond until after we first responded and made sure that the scene is clear for them to enter. Because social workers, they don't have the skill set to deal with people who are physically violent and are trying to hurt someone or hurt themselves or hurt the people that are responding. And so under our firemen, when we get some kind of calls, they send us first to make sure that it's safe, and then the firemen can enter. The firefighters can enter the scene safely after that. So our police officers are trained in many different ways. You know, we have de-escalation training. We have training in proportionality, training in how to be compassionate with our community. And while I do totally agree that we need more social workers to help us, we need more services for our community, because oftentimes our officers go there and the services aren't available. I see what we need is more people helping and not less. So if you take police out of the equation and you start sending social workers to all these calls, you're going to have social workers that end up being injured or killed because we're sending them into very potentially violent situations. Our calls for service that may look like non-police calls because they come in as people in mental health crisis oftentimes turn violent. They can quickly turn violent, and we need to make sure that whoever we're sending has the tools. And whether that's social workers or police officers or firemen or whoever it is that we're going to send into these calls, they need to have those tools. And my fear is that we're going to be sending people in that aren't prepared to deal with these violent situations when they arise.
What part of the conversation regarding police in our community and the job it does angers your officers the most right now?
Well, our officers have chosen to work in a very difficult city. They've come here to work. Me, I grew up in Sacramento. I love this city. It's a very important place for me, and I want to do the best that I can to serve this community. And I think a lot of times it's the misconceptions, you know, that police officers are portrayed as these violent people. And our officers, they're the good guys. They're out there. They're each day they leave their families behind. They put on their badge and they enter the community to serve that community, never knowing if they're going to come back home. And I think it hurts sometimes when our officers, when I see so much good they do in this community, and sometimes they're not recognized for that. And in fact, sometimes they're demonized for the work that they do in serving their community.
When, if I were talking to your officers after hours and sort of totally on background, how would they say that the city's leadership has failed them during this challenging time?
Well, you always want people to stand up for you. And a lot of times we have politicians and they're trying to find the best way for their political careers to move forward. And so they don't always take the opportunity to thank their officers for the hard work that they do. And to realize that, you know, without our police officers, this community falls apart. Oftentimes it's our police officers that hold our community together. Our families are safe in their homes because our police are there to protect them. Our businesses can thrive because our police officers are there to keep them safe. Our roads, we can safely drive our roads because our police officers are there to take drunk drivers off the street. And we take our police officers out of the equation and we have chaos in our society. And so sometimes we're just taken for granted. And, you know, that's the way politics works. Our politicians are often looking at what's the next thing I can get elected to and where I can move forward. And they fail to realize that when they're sitting on the city council, when they are running the city, they are an employer to 700 members of the Sacramento Police Department who are looking for them for guidance and support.
Brooklyn College professor Alex Vattel, in his book, The End of Policing, explained in an NPR interview that there is a myth that police are politically neutral and enforce laws to benefit everyone equally. How do you respond to the charge that the SAC PD, especially for Black males and all people of color, is more like an occupying force and is potentially more dangerous to their lives and safety than the criminals that the police department is supposed to protect them from?
Well, we can see simply from the time during the protests that that's not true. During the protests that we had recently, the department was forced to pull our officers out of many of the neighborhoods and all the detectives away from their desk to respond to the protests. And that policing vacuum that occurred in these neighborhoods, we saw a huge increase in violent crimes. Shootings were up, homicides were up. We saw people dying every night in our streets in neighborhoods which largely went uncovered by the media, who was focused on the protests downtown. But we saw a huge spike in violent crime in these neighborhoods. And it's when the protests were calmed down and we were able to redeploy our officers back into those neighborhoods, they were welcomed by these communities, communities of color, communities who wanted the police officers there. And it's the criminals that don't want us in the neighborhood because we're there to stop their activity. We had large numbers of gang shootings throughout the city during that period of time. And when our gang enforcement officers, our POP officers, our patrol district officers returned to those neighborhoods, and were able to start addressing the spike in crime, they were overwhelmingly welcomed back into those neighborhoods.
Many times within the Black community, and I'm an African American myself, we have to have a conversation with particularly our boys called the talk, where we have to assume that any interaction with a police officer could end in violence, regardless of whether you've done anything wrong or not. Help me as a father feel better about the fact, or get over the fact, that I feel worried about my children's interaction with the police department.
Well, I'm a father also, and I have children who are adults and teenagers. And I've had discussions with my children about how to behave on a traffic stop. And I think that's a conversation that everyone needs to have, regardless of their racial background. Traffic stops are one of the most dangerous things police officers do. They never know what to expect when they get up to the window. And our officers, when they get up there, they need to be safe, and our community needs to be safe. And so we need to educate all of our children as they become driving age, what to expect if they are pulled over, whether they agree with the violation or not. The time in the car is not to have that discussion, but we need to keep everybody safe, and that includes our community and our officers. And so sometimes when we get up to the window, things start sort of escalate, but we all need to keep those calm. We need to train our children to stay calm. We need to train our officers to stay calm, and that we can mitigate those issues. So I think it's an important conversation for every American to have with their children. When they get their driver's license, one of the first things I've talked to my kids about is how to behave on a traffic stop.
And I think we'll leave it there. And that's our show. Thanks to our guests, and thanks to you for watching Studio Sacramento. I'm Scott Syfax. See you next time right here on KVIE.
Thank you for listening to Studio Sacramento from KVIE Public Television. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes to help others find it.
All episodes of Studio Sacramento, along with other KVIE programs, are available to watch online at kvie.org/video.